We're holding on Kuf Dalet Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom. We started discussing the question. Now, in our Mishnah, we had a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, whether we know, obviously, that the chalitza, the actual taking off of the shoe, is ma'akev, and if that wasn't done, then you don't have a valid chalitza. They both agree, on the other hand, that the kriya is not ma'akev. So if she didn't say, if he didn't say loy chafatzi lakachto, or she didn't say kocha yosal ish or whatever, then the chalitza is still good as long as they're able to speak. We said if they're not able to speak, then that's something else. But there was machlokas as far as the spitting. Is that ma'akev or not? Rabbi Eliezer said yes. Rabbi Akiva said no. So we said that they sent a message. Good morning, Avraham Moshe. They sent a message to Avod the Shmuel, saying that if a Yavama spit in front of Beis Din in front of the Yavam, then that passes her from Chalitza, and then they still have to, she has to do a proper Yibum. But in other words, the point is that now she has to do a proper Chalitza, but Yibum is now closed off as an option. So we're discussing which Tana would that be according to, and we said that according to Rabbi Akiva, in fact, since he says that the spitting is not ma'akiv, then according to him, on the face of it, it shouldn't passel either. So even if she spat, then that shouldn't prevent her afterwards from doing yibum, as long as no actual chalitza was done. We said only according to Rebbe would it come out that if she spit, then that's enough to passel her for yibum, and of course chalitza still has to be done to be matir her. So this is where we're picking up now, two lines from the bottom of Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. So the Gemara asked to me, Omer Rabbi Akiva, Rekiko Leposla. So are you telling me then, which we said before in the discussion, that Rabbi Akiva would say that the Rekika, that the spitting does not passel her from Yibum? In other words, that even if she did the spitting, as long as no chalitza was done, where Rabbi Akiva is saying that the chalitza is the only thing that's essential to the procedure, then until the actual chalitza is done, she would actually still be able to change her mind, or he'd be able to change his mind, and they could do Yibum. V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, cholza v'loy rachaka v'loy kora, if she did chalitza but did not spit and did not say the psukim, chalitzasa kshera, then the chalitza is still kosher, but rachaka v'loy cholza v'loy kora, on the other hand, if she spit but didn't do the chalitza and didn't say the psukim, then the chalitza is posel. Now, chalitza is posel implies, as it usually does, that it still has validity to the extent that it prevents yibum to him or to any of the other brothers. It just means that a kosher chalitza still needs to be done. And the braisa continues, kara v'loy rachaka v'loy cholza, if she only said the psukim and didn't spit and didn't do the chalitza, in kan beis mechush, then there's nothing to worry about, then they would even be able to do the yibum. Now, the braisa doesn't say who it's from, but mani, we have to figure out, of the tanoim that we know so far, which one is it? Ilemir Rabbi Eliezer, would we say it's a coin to Rabbi Eliezer? What do you mean? How could you say cholza v'loy rachaka v'loy kara chalitzas akshera? If it was a coin to Rabbi Eliezer, how could the braisa be saying that if she did the chalitza but not the spitting or the saying the psukim, the chalitza would be kosher? V'ha'am Rabbi Eliezer kocha ye'osa davashu ma'isim akim. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer had said that the words kocha means like this, so it has to be exactly like this, meaning that the procedure has to be done exactly. And ye'osa means anything that involves a ma'isa is ma'akiv, which includes the spitting. The point of the machlokas between him and Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah was that Rabbi Akiva said, since it says kocha ye'osa la'ish, so it means only actions that involve the goof of the yavam. So therefore, it only includes the actual chalitza, which involves the goof of the yavam, taking the shoe off him, but it doesn't include the spitting, which just happens in his presence. But the point is that Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah clearly says that the spitting is ma'akev. So obviously this braisa that says that chalitza without spitting is still kosher, but the Eved would not be according to Rabbi Eliezer. Elam ela pshita Rabbi Akiva. So evidently this braisa is according to Rabbi Akiva. V'katoni rokko v'lei cholza v'lei kora chalitza sepsula. Now the braisa continues that if she spit but did not do chalitza and did not say the psukim, then the chalitza is posel. So when we say posel, leman, it's posel as far as who? What does that prevent her from doing now? Ilema la alma doesn't mean that it prevents her, she still can't marry anybody else outside the family. Pshita, of course, mi havi chalitza de ishtalya la alma. After all, there was no chalitza. We know that for her to be mutter, to marry anybody outside the family, there has to be actual chalitza, there has to be an actual removal of the shoe, and we're saying there wasn't. El olav la achin. So evidently, when we say that chalitzasa psula, it must mean possible in the sense that it passes her to the other brothers, to him and all the other brothers. So therefore, shmamina, so that shows that even according to Rabbi Akiva, so not like we said before, we argued before at the end of the previous amud, that according to Rabbi Akiva, we would say that given that he, on the face of it, given that in the Mishnah he said that even when you're doing the actual mitzvah of chalitza, he said that rikika is not ma'akiv, because he said chalitza by itself is enough, just taking off the shoe. How much more so we said that, we drew an analogy with cases of korbanos, where, for example, you have the emorim of the korban have to be offered on the mizbeach, but if they're gone, then you don't have to. In the same way, we would say that Rabbi Akiva, on the face of it, would say that the spitting doesn't do anything at all. Now we're saying that no, based on the braisa we just quoted, in fact, Rabbi Akiva would say that the spitting has an effect of passeling her for Yibum, and therefore, when they sent the message to Avor Shmuel saying Yivama Shiracha Kotachlitz, we don't have to say that's only according to Rebbe. We could, in fact, say that it is according to Rabbi Akiva as well. Well, then the question becomes, a lot of Akiva, Maishna Rikiko, Maishna Kriya. Well, then, why is it, according to Rabbi Akiva, that the Rikika is enough to passel her, and why is it that the Kriya doesn't? After all, according to him, the only one of the three things that's Akiv is the taking off the shoe. So why is he distinguishing and saying one of them makes it a kosher, a chalitza, and without it, you don't have a chalitza, namely the taking off the shoe. One of them was saying the rikika doesn't make it a kosher chalitza, but it's enough to make it a posel chalitza that passels her for yibum in the future. And one, the kriya doesn't do anything at all. What's the difference? Why does he distinguish between rikika and kriya? And the answer is kriya de isa ben betchila ben basayif. Because the kriya, you have two different ones. There's something that she says before the yibum, and there's something before the chalitza, and there's something that she says after it. Because you have, before she actually takes off the shoe, she says the words, Mayan Yavami Lahakim Lahakim Shem Yisrael Loy Ova Yami. And after she takes off the shoe and spits, she says, Kocha Yeosa. So therefore, so the Kriya, the Issa, Bein Matchila Bein Vasoif, given that there are things that she says both at the beginning and at the end of the procedure, Loy Michla Falei, nobody will get confused by it. In other words, what could you have? You could have a case where afterwards she does Yibum. Now, you don't want people to think that mistakenly that after Chalitza you're still allowed to do Yibum. People are going to realize that if she only says psukim, people are going to figure, okay, she said only the psukim beforehand. She said mei and yavami, and all of a sudden the yavam spoke up and said, what are you talking about, mei and yavami? You know what, I would like to do yivum. So therefore, nobody's going to think that there was actual chalitza, and then they went ahead and did yivum, which, as we've learned previously in the Masechta, would be an isur lahav. On the other hand, rikika de betchila leso l'vaseif isa. On the other hand, the spitting is done only once. After she takes off the shoe, then she's supposed to spit. So now, michla falei, so now there's the possibility of confusion. If she only spits and people only saw the spitting, they're going to think, well, she must have previously done the chalitza. We just missed that part. And now afterwards, if we were to say that after the spitting, she's allowed to do yibum, then but also the mishri, chalutza l'achen, people are going to think that after chalitza, she's still allowed to marry one of the brothers when in fact she's not. So that would be, even though it's true that the kika, according to Rabbi Akiva, is not ma'akiv, nevertheless, we'd have reason, midrabanan, to say that it would pass off for yibum in order to avoid such a, in order to avoid such confusion. So the Gemara tells in this connection, all of that is one version of what they sent to Avor de Shmuel and the discussion that resulted. The Ikadamri, another version, is Hochi Shochulei. They sent Avor de Shmuel the following message, where, as we said yesterday, Avor de Shmuel was a distinguished Rav in Bavel, so therefore, when they're sending him a message from Eretz Yisrael with practical halachas that he should be aware of as the Av Beis Din in the area. Anyway, so according to the second version, what they sent him, the message was, Yivoma Shadroka Kotachloitz, that if she spat, then she does need to do chalitza, like in the first lashon. But the point was that the einat tzricha loruk pam acheres. She does not have to spit again. So, in other words, even though the order is supposed to be first mei and yavami, then taking off the shoe, then the spitting, then kocha ya'asa l'ish. But if she did the spitting out of order, then she doesn't need to do it again. That was the point of what, so they're telling them two dinim, according to the second version. Number one, that the spitting makes it that now the only possibility is chalitza, there's no possibility of yibum anymore. And number two, that she doesn't have to spit again. As the Gemara says, ki hayhi da'asti l'kamei d'rab ami, as we have the example, good morning, Ali, we have the example of a Yavama who came to Rab Ami, have a Yosef Rab Abba Mamamo kamei, and Rab Abba Mamamo was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rab Ami, and she, by mistake, spit before she did the chalitza, before she took off the actual shoe. Omele Rab Ami. So Rab Ami says to his Talmud, Rab Abba Mamemel, chalitza, arrange for her the chalitza, v'shari la tigra, and dismiss her case. In other words, literally, shari la tigra literally means undo her argument, but it means, in other words, finish up the case and let her go. So in other words, the point is, he's telling Rab Abba Mamemel, you only need to, at this point, arrange that she actually takes off the shoe from the yavam, and once that's done, she doesn't need to spit again, and she's free to go. Rab Abba says, what do you mean? Doesn't she have to spit in the proper place of the procedure? Doesn't she have to spit b'chlal? So Rab Ami says, harakakallah. So she already spat. She doesn't need to again. So Rab Abba says, v'teiro kumabakach. So what? What's the problem? Let her spit again. The fact that you're telling me, chaloitz la, v'shori la tigra, implies that you want l'chatchila, that I should only arrange for the chalitza, that she takes off the shoe, and nothing more. Now, why is that? Why aren't you telling me, lachatchila, at least we should have her be spitting again? And the answer is, Rab Ami answers him, nafik minei churba, because if you make her spit again, then that could create problems, that could create misunderstandings. Namely, if you tell her that now she has to spit again in the proper place in the procedure, Amri, then people who see that are going to think, Rikika kamaisa lesba mashasha, that the original spitting has no consequence and it didn't passel her from Yibum. And then we're back to the problem that we said before, but also the Mishri chalutz l'achen. Now what's going to happen in the future? You're going to have a case where the spitting was done, people are going to think that the chalitza was already done because they know that the order was supposed to be chalitza, then spitting, and then v'osil mishra chalutza l'achen. And then the result is people are going to mistakenly think that when they see afterwards that if she only spit and now she's doing yibum, then people are going to think you are in fact allowed to do yibum after chalitza, which is not the case. Therefore, we want to make the spitting that's why we said before, we want to make the spitting consequential enough to passel her for yibum. And for that reason, Rab Ami is telling Rab Abba Mamemel, for the same reason, then we want people to realize that the original spitting had that consequence. Therefore, we're not going to make her do it again. So that way, people don't think that the first one does not have any consequences. So Rab Abba Mamemel says, "V'hal b'in kesidron, don't we need everything done in the proper order?" I mean, on the face of it, the Torah is giving us an order to do things. It means you have to do it in that order. So Rab Ami tells him, no problem. Kesidron lay ma'akva, doing things in the proper order that it says in the psukim is not ma'akiv. So in this case, it's true the spitting was supposed to be done after taking off the shoe. But in this case, she did it before, then fine. Because Midirabbanan, as we said, we don't want people to have this misunderstanding about chalitza followed by yibum. Therefore, we're going to say that kisidron is not ma'akin. So the Gemara says, "Who suffered dechoye kamad chile?" Now, Rab Abba Mamemel figured that Rab Ami must be just pushing him off. He may probably just giving him an excuse that, kisidron le ma'akva, don't worry about it. But does he actually have a basis for it? He didn't think he did. But nafak dok va'ashkach. But so nafak, Rab Abba Mamemel went out of the Beis Medrash. Dok, he checked into it. Va'ashkach, and sure enough, he found a braisa. Tanya, where Braisa says, "Bein shehiktim chalitza l'rekika, bein shehiktim rekika l'chalitza." Whichever one you did first, whether you did the chalitza first or the spitting first, masha asa asui. What's done is done, and it is a valid chalitza. So therefore, yes, that substantiates what Rab Ami is saying. That yes, the proper thing would have been if she hadn't spit first. If instead we had done things in the proper order, but once she did the spitting out of order, and we're saying we want that the spitting already should have consequences so that people don't mistakenly think that the spitting was done in its proper place after chalitza, and he was still allowed to do yibum. Because of that, we're going to say that if she spit at any point in the procedure, then she doesn't have to do it. Then we shouldn't have her do it again. And that way it will be clear to everybody this gzeira d'rabbanan about what happens after the spitting. Okay. More about the spitting and more about the procedure in general. The Gemara says, Levi nafak l'kir yasa. Levi, the Talmud of Levi was one of the prominent Talmudim of Rebbe. He one time, in particular, I think that Amam says later on, he was one of the Rebbeim of Shmuel. But anyway, so he was, so Nafak L'Kiryasa, one time he went out to the villages. So often in the Gemara, when it says that somebody went out to the villages, it can mean, for example, that he had property over there, for example, and he's going to check on it. The Yerushalmi actually tells the story over here in a little more detail, which we'll tell in a minute. So Bomine, while he was there in the villages, they asked him the question. They asked him a number of questions. Number one, Gidemes Mahushatachloitz. Can a woman whose hands have been amputated, can she still do chalitza, given that she doesn't have hands to undo the laces and take off the shoe with? Number two, Yevama Shirokka Dam Mahu. What happens if the Yevama spits blood? So she spits and blood comes out instead of saliva. And the third question they asked him is a posik in Daniel. So a Malach is telling Daniel about the four kingdoms, about the four empires that are going to rule over the Jewish people one after the other till Mashiach comes. And he says, Avol agid l'cha es roshem b'chsav emes. He says, however, I will tell you what's written down in the true writing. So what does that mean? The klal de'ikak sabsha ina emes. Does that imply that Lamaila, that in Shemayim, there's some kind of writing which is not true? So loy have biyade, he didn't know the answer to any of these questions. Also shol be medrasha, so he went and asked in the base medrash. So before we continue with what the answers were, so the Yerushalmi tells the story as follows. It says there was a town in Eretz Yisrael called Simonia. There's a town in the Galil. They one time asked Rebbe, they said, we need you to send somebody who will be our one-stop shop for everything that we need in Yiddishkeit. He should be our chazan and our rav and our melamed and so on and so forth. Now the Yerushalmi doesn't say why they ask like that. Why don't they just have one of different people for different jobs? You have that famous series of books Koryasu Chachameinu that was translated into English as our sages showed the way. They have the story over there. The writer over there, Yecheved Segal, suggested that maybe Pashut they were poor and they were saying we can't afford to support so many clay kodesh. Anyway, Akitzur, so Rebbe sends them Levi. This Talmud of his, Levi. Levi comes over there, and of course, they're showing him great honor. Our new Rav and Chazan and so forth is coming. So they built for him a big platform in the city square, and they're sitting him on it, and they ask him they ask him the first question, and he doesn't know the answer. So they ask him the second question. He still doesn't know the answer. They think to themselves, okay, so maybe he's not so expert in halacha. Maybe he's an expert in Agadah. So they ask him the third question, which is a question in Agadah, and he still doesn't know the answer. They're very disappointed. They send a message to Rebbe. What kind of person did you send us? And Rebbe was very shocked. He says, I sent you a person who's fully of the same caliber as me. Tell Levi to come back to you and let me discuss this with him, find out what's going on. So Levi comes back and Rebbe asks him, the questions. Now, our Gemara says over here that he went and asked in the Beis Medrash, and they told him the version in the Yerushalmi is that he himself knew each of the answers. So Rebbe says, okay, well, then why don't you tell these guys in Simonia? And Levi says, you know what happened, Rebbe? When they put me on that platform, I felt very proud. I felt very good about myself. And that caused me to forget my learning. So the story ends there. So we don't know what happened. But Pashtus, I guess Rebbe sent him back there and then maybe told the people not to give him such covered and not to give him such public covered in order not to make him proud. But whatever the case, the point is, it's the same story. But that's the reason why the Yerushalmi says why he forgot these details. Tosfos Yeshanim refers to that Yerushalmi. Anyway, so. So what were the answers? Omrule, so they answered him. On the first question, you're asking, what about a woman whose hands have been amputated, whether she can do chalitza? Sure. Miksiv v'cholza biyad. The pasuk doesn't say anything about that she has to do chalitza with her hand. So now we learned previously, Tosfos refers over here to something we learned the other day, that you're supposed to do it with the right hand. That's only the mitzvah ba'alma. Ideally, she should do it with her right hand. But if she doesn't have a right hand or she doesn't have any hands at all, then in fact, she could do it any way that she could, even with her teeth. In fact, there's an interesting discussion among Achronim in a similar vein when it comes to taking the Dalad Minim on Sukkos, given that also the Pasuk doesn't say the Yad either. It says, L'kachtam l'chem b'yem rishin. So would it be valid if a person's hands have been amputated, could he take the Dalad Minim with his teeth? There's some discussion about it, some discussion on this question among Achronim. Anyway, so that's the first answer. Yes, she could do chalitza. If necessary, she'll bend down and undo the straps and then remove the shoe with her teeth. Thank you. The second question, we find that Yoav tricked Avner into doing that, and then while Avner was bent down to show him how to do it, then Yoav took out a sword and killed him. Anyway, so that's the first one. The second one, umiksib yoko roik. Similarly, as far as the second question, it doesn't say she has to spit saliva, just says she has to spit. So whatever comes out of her mouth, even if it's blood, is fine for that purpose. The third question, aval og agad l'chal roshim b'ksav emes. The third question, the Malach is telling Daniel that I will tell you what's written in the true writing. Does that imply v'chi yesh ksav she'in emes? Is there a writing in Shemayim that's not true? The answer is like Kasha, kan b'gzav din she'yesh ima shvur, kan b'gzav din she'in ima shvur. It depends whether the gzav din has a shvur attached to it or not. If it doesn't have a shvuah, then in a certain sense, it's not emes. It hasn't been sealed. We know chosamah shalach harish baruch hu emes. It hasn't been sealed, so to speak, with Hashem's seal, with Hashem's stamp. Therefore, in that sense, it's not emes, meaning that it can still be overturned. But if there's a shvuah, with it, then it cannot be overturned, and therefore that can be called ksav emes. So now, when the Malach is telling Gavriel that I will inform you what's written, the ksav emes, it means that Hashem has sworn that these things are actually going to happen. The Yerushalmi says it slightly differently. The distinction is not whether Yeshima Shavua or Enima Shavua, but whether the Gzaudin has been sealed or not. So the Gemara says, Kidder of Shmuel Ba'ami. Now this fits with what Rav Shmuel Ba'ami says. The Amr of Shmuel Ba'ami, Amr of Yonason, Minayim L'Gzaudin Sheyeshima Shavua She'enim Iskareya. How do we know that a Gzaudin of Hashem that's accompanied by a Shavua will not be ripped up? Shenemar. In the Pasuk, this is in Sefer Shmuel, you have Shmuel's first Nevuah, which is about the family of Eli, what's going to happen to them as a result of the Averis that Eli's sons, Chofni and Pinchas, have been doing. So he says, Lochein nishbaiti leveis Eli, therefore I've sworn about the family of Eli, imiskapra avon beis Eli, bezevach of mincha ad olam, that the sins of beis Eli will never be atoned with korbonus or with menachos forever. So we see that since Hashem says l'chein nishbati, then it means it's permanent and irrevocable. So now the Gemara adds another point. Now Rashi makes a point of saying that the girsa is supposed to be Omar Rava or Rabba rather than Ve'omar. Ve'omar would mean that we don't understand what the previous one means until we have the next line. But in fact, that's not so. What it is once the Gemara has established, that's it. We've established that a Gzaudin, Sheyeshima Shavua, cannot be canceled. Now, incidentally, the Gemara is mentioning another point. Since the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that the Aveda will not be atoned with Zevach or Mincha, that does imply there is a different way of being Mechaper. So the Gzaudin, Sheyeshima Shavua, lasts forever. And forever, if they do Zevach or Mincha, it's not going to help them. But there are other things the Pasuk is implying, which if they do, will help them. And the Gemara tells, therefore, we have this in Rosh Hashanah as well, Omer Rabba, b'zevach of mincha ein meskaper. It means it won't be atoned with zevach of mincha, av meskaper hu b'divrei Torah. But it can be atoned with divrei Torah, meaning that if the descendants of Eli learn Torah the way they're supposed to, then their lives will be lengthened, they won't die young as this Gzeira is. Abaya Omar, b'zevach of mincha ein meskaper, av meskaper b'gnulis chasadim. Abaya says that it means it's not going to be atoned with zevach or mincha, but it means that it will be meskaper with gmilas chasadim. So Abaya may mean gmilas chasadim by themselves, or he may mean gmilas chasadim together with Torah. Now, why would that be? Marsha explains like this: we know al shloisha dvarim ha'olam oimel, al Torah, al avodah, al gmilas chasadim. Now, what happened with Bnei Eli? One of the Averis that they were doing was that they were treating the couple of the Averis that they did involved treating the Kodshim with contempt. the Psukim describe over there how when people would bring the korbanos, they would grab whatever portions they wanted. They wouldn't even wait until the chalev was offered on the Mizbeach before they started taking. When the Gemara explains in Shabbos, when women would come to bring bird korbanos, they wouldn't be in a hurry to bring them, and therefore the women would have to stay over by the Mishkan extra time. So they were treating the korbanos in a disrespectful way. So therefore, en kategor nasa sanegor. So therefore, the same korbanos, the same avoda that they disobeyed Hashem with, can't now be used to help them. Therefore, so Rabbah is saying that you need only one of the other amudim, Torah by itself, and Abaya is saying that you need two of them, Torah and Gmilus Chasadim.
Abaya lived shorter because Rabbah was doing.
So one second. So Rabbah va Abaya midveis Eli ka'asu. Now Rabbah and Abaya both descended from the family of Eli. In fact, they were uncle and nephew. Rabba occupied himself with Torah during that time. Therefore, he lived to 40 years. Abaya de Osik with Torah with Mos Hasodim, Choya Shittin Shnin. Abaya was occupied with Torah and with Mos Hasodim, and he lived to be 60 years old. Now, Tosfos points out, it's not that Rabba was not Osik in Gmilus Hasodim. He certainly was, but he wasn't Osik so much with it. Unlike Abaya, who was Osik with it much more, and therefore that gained him 20 extra years. Now, Tosfos also discusses here in Rosh Hashanah whether the correct girsa is Rava or Rabba. Now, Tosfos says, evidently it has to be Rabba, because Rava was not a Kohen. So, and the family of Eli were Kohenim, so anybody who's descended from them has to be a Kohen. So therefore, Tosfos says, it has to be over here, Rabba. On the other hand, there are Gersois Rava, and there are different explanations. Rashi over here, for example, Rashi doesn't say actually about this. He says about the previous thing that what Rava says, the Zevach of Mincha and Meskaper. But there are Rishonim who have the Girsa Rava, and they explain, for example, now there's a Gemara in Chulin that bears on this, where it says that Rava tells his Shamash, who was a Kohen, to take the Zroi L'chayayim Mekeva, implying that Rava himself was not a Kohen. However, on the other hand, in Chulin over there, I think Rashi even talks about over there, the possibility that maybe Rava himself was not a Kohen, but maybe his mother was from Beis Avi. So therefore, that could still justify the Girsa over here, Rava. Rava outlived Abaya, but not necessarily were they the same age. Now, there is a Gemara. Now, it's true. Rav Shuda Goyen tells us in his Igeres that Rava lived after Abaya passed away. Rava lived another 14 years. But we don't have to say that they were the same age. Now, there is a Gemara in Brachas where you have a story where Abaya and Rava were both young children at the same time. And Rava asks them, when we make a Bracha, whom are we addressing? And they say Rachmana, they say Hashem. And where is Hashem? And one of them points to the ceiling and the other one goes out and points to the sky. And Rava is very impressed with them. So if that is Rava, regular Rava and Shas, then yeah, it would mean that he and Abaya are about the same age. Then it would necessarily have to be that the Girsa over here would be Rabba, because then yeah, then Rava would have outlived Abaya by law. On the other hand, there were Girsois over there that wasn't Rava, but rather Rava by Rav Chon, who was a different Amora. So in that case, Rava conceivably could have been a lot younger than Abaya. It's interesting, actually, that Rav Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, has an explanation of the Kabbalah about that Gemara in Brachas, and also about our Gemara over here, where he says it is in fact Rava, the famous Rava, and Abaya, and that literally one of them lived to be 40 and the other one lived to be 60. And he explains up the Kabbalah that it also relates to that story in Brachas, where 40 and 60, Shlosmem and Samach, represent two different kinds of makifim, makif akariv and makif arocha, because we call them in Hasidic, in terminology of Hasidus. And one of them, and then he says, Rava was associated more with makif akariv and Abaya more with makif arocha, or maybe it's the other way around, I don't remember. And therefore, in keeping with that, one of them pointed to the ceiling, which is the makif akariv, and the other one pointed to the sky, which is the makif arocha. So according to that, it would mean it is Rava over here, in fact. With all of that said, by the way, another point to consider then it would be Abaya lived 60 and Rava lived 40. That's what we're saying. However,
Rava lived
outlived Abaya. So Rav Levik doesn't deal with the chronology over there. So he doesn't deal with the fact that Rav Shuda Goyen says that Rava outlived Abaya by many years. Maybe he would say that maybe it is in fact Rava Bar Rav Hanan over there, but since he and Rava share the same first name, then it means they have a certain kesher between them. Anyway, with all that, by the way, it's worth pointing out the Derdus HaRishonim of series on Jewish history deals with this Gemara extensively, and he says on various grounds, even if you say that it's Rabba in all Gemara over here, it's very difficult to say, based on various other Gemaras, that Rabba in fact lived to only 40 years old. So he in fact changes the Girsa and says that what the Gemara is saying is both of them lived to 60. So he says, in other words, like this, on the surface, what the Gemara is saying over here is that Abaya's point is correct, that you need Torah Ugmilas Chasadim, and only then will you live longer, and if you have only Torah, then you're going to live shorter. But he says, maybe not. Maybe the Gemara is saying that Adarabba, Rabba's position is correct. Torah by itself, you don't even need Gmilas Chasadim, just Torah by itself is enough to cancel the Gzeira, and then the person lives to a decent age of 60. And he explains various other Gemaras on that along those lines as well.
It's just not so clear.
So it's not so clear, yeah. Okay, anyway, going on. Tana Rabbanan, further on this topic of base A, B, and the Gzeira on them, Mishpacha Achas Hoysa B'Yerushalayim, Shoyim Mason K'ban Shmona Esri Shana. There was a family in Yerushalayim where the men in that family would die at about 18 years old. Bovo Dios Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai. So they came and informed Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai to ask him, what can we do about that? Omalahem, he says, Shema Mishpachas Eli Atem. Is it possible that you're from the family of Eli? Now, this is almost 1,000 years after the times of Eli, but the family was still in existence. Shenema v'chomarbis beischa yomusa anoshim. One of the nevuos that was said to Eli on this topic was that all the men of your house are going to die as anoshim, as young men. So Maharsha explains, that's why they died at 18. Before that age, they're not even of the age of marriage yet. They can't really be called anoshim. This is the first age when they can be called anoshim. So he tells them, go occupy yourselves with Torah and you will live longer. So sure enough, they went and occupied themselves with Torah and they lived longer. And from then on, they called themselves, or people called them, the family of Yochanan after Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, who saved their lives. Okay, continuing on this topic of a Gemara, now going back to the point about a Gzar Din that has a Shavua or doesn't have a Shavua. So Omer of Shmuel ba'unya Omer Rab, minayin l'Gzar Din shal Tzibur she'enin nechtam. How do we know that Hashem's Gzar Din, that Hashem's verdict about the Tzibur never gets sealed? In other words, implying that it can always be overturned. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, ain't in nechtam? What do you mean it doesn't get sealed? V'haksiv, you have a pasuk that implies that it does. Yumiya is speaking to the Jewish people collectively. It's in the second haftarah of the 3 weeks. Kiyim techabsi b'neser. He says to them, even if you scrub yourself with neser, which is a type of earth that they used in those days for laundry, with sabriloch bodus, and even if you use a lot of bodus, which is a plant that has that has soap in it, nichtam avonich lefanai, your averas have been stained in front of me, implying, in other words, that Hashem is saying there's already a gzar din and it's already been stamped because of your averas. You're right. What Rav Shmuel Bar Unya means is minayin shafilu nechta miskareya. How do we know that even though for the tzibur, even though the gzar din has already been sealed and stamped, it can still be ripped up if the people do tshuva? How do we know? Shenema mikashem alakenu b'chol kareinu elav. As the pasuk says, who is like Hashem, our God, at any time we call to him. So any time implies even after the gzar din and even after it's been signed and sealed, nevertheless, it can still, the people can do tshuva and it can be ripped up. We talked about before, by the way, on Daf Tzadik Ches, we said that, well, first of all, you had something like that with Nineveh, but we learned over there also, as far as Yonah, that you had something similar where there was a Gzar Din on the Aseres HaShivatim because of their Averis, but then at some point they did a degree of Tshuva, and Hashem, on the contrary, took away the Gzar Din against them where they'd been badly beaten by Aram, and on the contrary, they defeated Aram and became a superpower. So the Gemara says, "V'oksiv dirshu Hashem b'imotzoi." On the other hand, don't you have a pasuk that says, "Seek Hashem when He is found," implying that there's only a certain time when Hashem can be found, and after that, not so much. And the answer was, "Like Kasha habi yochid habi tzibur." There's a difference between the yochid and the tzibur. The tzibur is gzar din, can always be ripped up, as opposed to, because it's always an ace rotzim for the tzibur. But the yochid, there's only certain times. Once it's been there, once it's been sealed, like for base Eli, then we're saying that it can't be overturned. So the Gemara says, Yochid Emas. Okay, so for Yochid, what is that time of Behimotzai? When's that time when Hashem is easily found and you can do tshuva and overturn the Gzardin? Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Bavua, Elo Asora Yomim, Shemen Roshon, the Yom Kippurim, that's during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Then Hashem is close, even to the Yochid, and therefore even the Yochid's Gzera can be whipped up at that time. But not, but the tzibur is a different matter. We actually had Udiyu and the Masechta also involved. We had Udiyu and the Masechta, the story involving Menashe and Yeshaya, where Menashe, King Menashe, the Rosha, claimed that the various things that Yeshaya had said in his Nevoros contradicted the Torah. And one of them was this, where he says, it says in the Torah, you're saying, so you must be a false Navi. And the Gemara says, no, that's talking about, one's talking about the Yochid and one is talking about the Tzibur. Marsha points out the words b'chol kareinu elav, the whole pasuk is written in the plural, mi kashem alekeinu b'chol kareinu elav, as opposed to dushu Hashem b'imotzei. It starts out b'loshen yachid dushu, that you plural should seek out Hashem, but then it continues b'loshen yachid, but then it continues, the next pasuk continues b'loshen yachid yazed rosha darke v'ish oven machshavosav. That is why the Gemara tells us that that pasuk is talking only about the yachid. Okay. Next, going back now to Dinim of Yibum, the Gemara says, Shochol Leila Avur D'Shmuel, they sent another message to Avur D'Shmuel, Yivama Sherocha Kadam Tachlitz. We said before that one of the questions they asked Levi was if the Yivama spits blood, is it kosher? Now, not really kosher, by the way, I forgot to mention before. Rashi says, we're not really talking about whether it's kosher or not. We established before that Bechlal, the spitting, is not Ma'akib, according to Rabbi Akiva, and the Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. What we mean is it chalitza malyasa? Is it a good chalitza, or should we be telling her, you know what, try to spit again and see if you can get some spit out? So now they sent a message to Avur D'Shmuel, Yivama Sherocha Kadam Tachlitz. If she spit blood, then she needs to do chalitza. In other words, again, that spitting passes. Tosfos explains that you have two different messages. First, they sent him the first one that we said before on Kufdal of Beis, and then a second version of it on our onward, where they sent him Bechlal, that if she spits, then she's possible for Yibum in the future. Now, they sent him a follow-up message that that's true, not only if she spits saliva, but even if she spat blood. Because the blood inevitably is going to have little droplets of saliva in it, and therefore saliva came out. So the Gemara says, Mesmi, I have a contradiction to that. On the other hand, we learn in a Braisa, when you have a Zov or other Tmeim who have the same level of Tumah as a Zov, a Nida and the rest of them. So now we know that we know that their saliva is an avatoma. We know that also, for example, blood that comes out of his organ is also metame, and also his shichvas zera, also his urine. So all of them are an avatoma. So yochol yehi dam. So sorry, actually, blood from his ama is not. But you would think that yochol yehi dam yotz mipiv mipia ama tame. You would think that blood that comes from his mouth should be like his saliva and should be matame, or that blood that comes out of his ama, out of his male organ, should be matame, just like his urine or his shechvasera. No, tamad lema zoive tame. Therefore, the pasuk says his zoive is tame. Ve'in dama yotzim epivu v'yama tame ala tohar. But blood that comes out of his mouth or from his organ is not tame, it's tohar. The Gemara in Nida, by the way, discusses the details. It has to be, it's called misagil v'yotze. In order for it to be matame as an avatuma, it has to be something which collects in a large amount and then comes out, as opposed to these things which sort of just dribble out. Anyway, the point is, so we see that blood from the mouth, we don't say that there's saliva in it. If there was saliva in it, we would say it is an avatuma, just like regular saliva from a zav, and we're saying that not. So how can we say over here that EF, sure, that the blood from her mouth shouldn't have bits of saliva in it? And the answer is like Kasha, can be mitzetis, can be shoisis. There's a difference whether the blood is dribbling out, whether she sucks the blood, like from between her teeth or from wherever it is that's coming from her mouth, and then she spits. The sucking inevitably will mix some saliva with it. So then that's what we're saying, that it would be kosher for chalitza, as opposed to if it's just dribbling out by itself, then we're saying, you're right, that's not considered spitting, and therefore she hasn't done the spitting, and preferably we should have her do it again. Again, if she didn't, then the chalitza is still kosher, because halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, but nevertheless, the chalitza, we should have her do a proper spitting. So now if she sucks the blood from between her teeth or wherever it is, and then she spits, then it will have saliva mixed in, and then it's fine, even like filler. Okay, the Mishnah had said, so now we said in the Mishnah, we said that if a cheresh does chalitza, then we said, and we said a couple of other cases, one of them being chalitza slakotten. One was that if the yavama was a gdola and she did chalitza and the yavam was a cotton, then we said chalitza sapsula, then it's a posel of chalitza, again, meaning that it passes her for yibum, but they still have to do a proper chalitza. So Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Zu Divrei Rav Meir. That would only be according to Rav Meir. We learned in a previous perek that Rav Meir, in the 10th perek, on Daf Tzadik Vav, we learned that Rav Meir held that the chalitza of a boy 9 years old or above is the equivalent of a get by an older yavam, and in fact, so it doesn't take the place of chalitza, but it passes the yavama for you. But the Chachamim say the chalitza of a cotton is nothing whatsoever, and therefore, according to the Chachamim, it wouldn't even passel him for yibum. So if they did chalitza when he was a cotton, they could still change their mind before he becomes a gadol and do yibum. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Ketana shecholtza v'chola, we said that if a Ketana does chalitza, so we said she should do chalitza again when she gets older. If she didn't, then we said chalitza sepsula, then the chalitza is possible. Again, that passes over Yibum. And we discussed before, the Tosfos on this is printed over here, that Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that says that actually if she didn't, then chalitza is a ksheva. So again, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Zu Divrei Rav Meir. This is all according to Rav Meir, that Rav Meir had said that a ketana cannot do yibum. De Amar Ish Kosev Parsha. Rav Meir says like this: the pasuk clearly says the word ish. It says v'moyach b'tza ish. So therefore, that excludes a cotton, which is why we said before that the chalitza of a cotton certainly can't be kosher. According to the mayor, the chachamim gave it the force of a get by a gadol, and according to the chachamim, they didn't even do that. So therefore, you definitely need the yavam to be an ish. Umakshin an ish al ish. And so says Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rab, that Rabbi Meir would also say that we make a hekesh between the isha and the ish. Even though it doesn't say the word isha in the pasuk, nevertheless, you still have the pasuk says the imlo yachbet ish for also yivimto. If a man doesn't want to do yivum, then the yavama goes up to the dayanim, implying therefore that Rav Meir would say there's a hekish between the yavam and the yavama if he has to be a gadol and so does she. So therefore, on Mishnah that says that she should do chalitza again, and if not, then it's possible would be according to Rav Meir. According to what Tosfos is saying, that we would say that the hekesh is only drabbana. Avo chachamim omim ish ksiva parsha. On the other hand, the chachamim disagree with the mayor, and they say no. It does say the word ish in the parsha, sure. So therefore, the yavam has to be a gadol, but isha ben gdola ben ktana. But it never says anything about isha. They don't hold of the hekesh that Rav Meir is learning from. Therefore, they say the yibum would be kosher whether she's a gdola or not. Even if she's a tana, it would still be kosher. So again, if we follow the Girsay in Arm Mishnah, then it would mean Rav Meir would be saying it's a chalitza psula, and Rav Yossi would be saying that it's ksheva. And according to the Girsa that Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, it would mean that Rav Meir would say that it's possible midrabanon, but b'diavad, if you didn't do yibum again, if you didn't do chalitza again, I mean, then it would be kosher. And Rav Yossi would say that even lachatchila, she could do it as a So the Gemara says, "Man chachamim Rabbi Yosi." When we say chachamim over here, who do we mean? We mean specifically this is Rabbi Yosi's opinion. And how do we know that? It starts like this: Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon ben Rebbe habu yasvi. One time, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon ben Rebbe were sitting together. Posachad minay over Omar. One of them started the discussion. One of them started the conversation by saying, "Hamispalo sorach shigitin ein of lamata." When a person is davening Shemana Esrei, he has to be looking downward. Why downward? So Rashi says he has to be looking towards Eretz Yisrael. The Pashtus, in other words, we're talking about the person is standing in Eretz Yisrael and davening. And the Shekhinah is there in Eretz Yisrael. The Pasuk says, Hashem says that my eyes and my heart will always be there in the Beis Hamikdash all the time. So therefore, we should be looking downward. Other other Rishonim learn a little bit differently. Rashi over here is saying that he has to look towards Eretz Yisrael. Other Rishonim learn that it means specifically he should be imagining, this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, he should be imagining himself as though he's standing in the Beis Hamikdash. And if he's standing in the Beis Hamikdash, he's looking downward at the floor of the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, a person should be davening in that posture. The Chad Omer, the other one, on the other hand, says, no, Ein of Lamaila, his eyes should be up. As the pasuk says, we should lift up our hearts to kapoyim, where one of the meanings of kapayim means the clouds. So we should be looking upward. Hagoyis Habach brings a different girsa, which is that the other one says that you have to mechaven your heart upward. So you take a look downward, but you have kavana upward. Adahafi, as they were discussing this, also Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yosef Gabayu, Rabbi Shmuel came to join them, and this is the son of the Rabbi Yosef who we were saying before. Stam Rabbi Yosef in the Mishnah and in the Gemara is Rabbi Yosef ben Chalafta, and now his son Rabbi Shmuel. So Amalehu Mayaskitu. So he asks Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon ben Rebbe, what are you involved with right now? What are you discussing in Torah? Amalehu Tefila. So they told him, we're discussing dinim of Tefila. He says to them, Kach Omar Abba, this is what my father said. Rabbi Yossi had said that you need both. In fact, you need both. Your eyes should be focused downward, but your heart, your thoughts should be focused upward. So that way, both of these psukim are being niskayim. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings from Sefer Chassidim that he says that if a person looks upward and is davening, then like the malachim make fun of him. Like, what kind of a posture is that for davening? So you need to be facing downward, except the Alter Rebbe adds in Shulchan Aruch, if a person feels at some point during Shemoneh Esrei there's kavana, that he's losing his kavana, then he should look upward in order to refocus his kavana on Hashem, but then look back downward. In Chassidus, by the way, in a number of places, it talks about the idea, yeah, that brings it in Lukot HaTorah, and it's brought in different places after that, that the meaning of Ein of Lamata, Liber Lamaila, also means that you have to be focused on Yichuda Ilah and Yichuda Tatah. And in various places in Chassidus, it explains what it means. It means that you have to, your avoda of tefillah shouldn't just remain lamaila, it shouldn't just remain someplace up there in the cloud, but rather you have to work on bringing it down, the poil into your avoda down here on earth. So in that sense, ein of lamata, your eyes are focused down here. What is my tefillah going to be accomplishing as far as my avoda, as far as my avoda sabirurim, as far as being mevarer myself and the world around me, and liber lamaila, and then your heart and your thoughts are focused above, how am I going to bring a lakus down here into the world? Continues the story. Now, so far, we don't yet have anything about Rabbi Yossi saying that a Ktana can do chalitza. That we have the continuation of the story. Adahochi also Rebbe Lemasivta. While they were having this conversation, Rebbe came to the yeshiva to give his drasha. So everyone has to go sit in their place. Inu Dahu Kalili, now Rab Chia and Rab Shimon Berebi were quick on their feet. So they right away went and sat in their places. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, Agav Yukre, on the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was very heavy set. Rashi refers to, you have the Gemara in Bav Metzia that talks about a few of the Chachamim who were very heavy set, and Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was one of them. So because of that, he couldn't walk quickly, have him a Faseya V'Ozl. So he's walking slowly to his place. Meanwhile, everybody else is already quickly getting into their seats for Rebbe's Drasha. Omele Avdon, so one of the Talmidim over there named Avdon, says to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, Tosfos says that actually the Yerushalmi names him Abba Yudon. So Avdon, as he's called in Or Gemara over here, is a short form of the name Abba Yudon. Anyway, so Avdon, or Abba Yudon, says to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, like in a tone of contempt, Mi hu zeh shemfaseya al roshei am kodesh, who is this who's stepping over the heads of the holy people? Meaning you're not supposed to be doing that. You should have been in your place before everybody else sits down, so you don't have to step over them. Remember, in those days, the Talmidim usually sat on the ground. So literally, you have to literally be walking over their heads in order to get to your place. So what do you think you're doing? Amalei, so he answers, Ani Yishmol b'Rabbi Yossi, Shabbosi l'Umot Tomei b'Rabbi. Well, I'm Yishmol b'Rabbi Yossi, I'm coming to learn Torah from Rabbi, and therefore I have to go sit in my place. Omele, so Avram says to him, do you think that you're an erlich person that you deserve to be learning Torah from Rebbe? Omele, so now what kind of a question is that? I mean, what's going on over here? So there's a number of different explanations. Marsha explains that Avram is saying like this. We know that Rebbe was famously honored. Now, to step over people's heads shows a lack of anivus. It shows like I'm greater than them, and therefore I can inconvenience them in order to step and sit in my place. So when Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosef, when he's asking, what are you doing? Why are you stepping over the heads of the Rosh Am Kodesh? So he says, because I'm coming to learn Torah from Rebbe, meaning I have no choice. I have to go to my place. So Avdan says to him, you're acting like a Baal Gaiva. In that case, what are you doing learning Torah from Rebbe, who is famously so honored? So you don't deserve to be a Talmud of Rebbe, he's saying. So do you think that Moshe was Hogun to be learning Torah from Hashem? Moshe is a Nivra after all. He's nowhere near the level of Hashem, and yet he came to learn Torah from Hashem. So the same way I want to learn from Rebbe. Now, what does that mean? Marsha says, he's saying like this, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu also, to a certain extent, acted, even though Moshe was honored, Mikola Adam Asherah Pnei Adama, nevertheless, we see that there were times when it was necessary for him to act in a way that seemed to show a lack of respect for the people. We see, for example, in Parshas Yisroel, where Moshe is sitting and judging the people, and everybody else is standing. You're going to say it's not respectful to make everybody else stand while you sit, but that's how you have to do it. So therefore, and in fact, also he says, another point is, we find that Moshe was also stepping over everybody's heads, namely by Matan Torah. Kof alem how to dig this. Hashem took Har Sinai and suspended it over everybody's heads. Meanwhile, Moshe is up on Har Sinai. So he's literally over everybody's heads. So what do you want? The same way as we don't hold it against Moshe, and he still went and learned Torah from Hashem, the same way I can be stepping over because it's necessary because I couldn't get to my seat before that. So Avdan tells him, so what do you think? You're on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi answers back, so do you think your Rebbe, that Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who we're all learning from, do you think that he is Hashem? So he's not on the level of Hashem. Fine, I'm not on the level of Moshe, but he's not on the level of Hashem either. Omer Rabbi Yosef, shakli Rebbe l'metayp say, with that statement that Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi called Rebbe Rabcha, he calls him your Rebbe. He's saying to Avdan, he's your Rebbe, implying not mine. With that, Rebbe got what he deserved, namely, before Rebbe overheard this whole conversation, when Avdan says, Mihushem Faseya Roshe Am Kodesh, and Bechi Hogun Ata Boma Torah, then Rebbe should have stuck up on behalf of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosef. And he didn't. So now he got, now Rabbi Yosef, telling the story over 100 years later, says that Rebbe got what he deserved for that, that now, to call him a Rabcha Velo Rabbi. That now Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi calls him Rabcha. He says he's your Rebbe, implying not mine. So with that, Rebbe was paid back min Hashemayim for not standing up for Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi's covering. Anyway, so now the story continues. Adahochi ot asya yevama lekamei de Rebbe. As all of this was going on, a yevama came to Rebbe to arrange for chalitza. Omele Rebbe la Avdan. So Rebbe turns to the same Avdan who was just in the conversation over here, and he tells him puk bodka. Go out and check whether she has shtei sairos. Now, obviously, Avdon himself is not going to be checking her. That would be a gross breach of tznius. The Rambam explains, based on Gemara and Nida, what you do is you have women check her, and then they report their findings to the Rav. So in this case, Avdon would have to arrange for his wife or some other women or whatever to physically examine this girl, and then they would come and report to Avdon what's the story. So he went out to do that. Levosad and Nafak, after Avdon had left, Omele Rabbi Shmuel, then Rabbi Shmuel says to Rebbe, actually, you don't need that. Kach Omer Abba, Ish Kosev Parasha. This is what my father, Rabbi Yosi, said, that in the Parasha it says Ish, and therefore the Yava must be an adult. Abba Isha ben Gvela ben Ktana. But a woman, it doesn't say anything about Isha in the Pasuk, and we don't hold the Hekish that Rabbi Meir said before. Therefore, she can be a Gdola or a Ktana. This is where we see, when we said before, Man Chacham Rabbi Yosi, this part of the story shows that it's Rabbi Yosi, because Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yosi is saying that my father said that. Omalei, so Rebbe turns to Avdan and he says, Tuh, come back to your place. Loit Srichas, you don't have to go check this girl out. or have women check her out, Kvar Hora Zakin, the old Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, has already given the Hora. He's already said that it's good enough that even if she's a Ketana, then we don't need to worry about it. So Kamasa Avdan Va'asi. So now Avdan is stepping back over everybody's heads to go back to his place. You know what? Somebody who was needed by the Am Kodesh, and he meant, for example, himself, where Rebbe needed the statement that he said in the name of his father. So Yifsal Rosh Am Kodesh, it's appropriate that he can be stepping over the heads of the holy people. In other words, he's saying about himself, I, who evidently the Tzibur needs me, because we see that Rebbe himself needed the statement that I told him in the name of my father, which otherwise he didn't know. So I have a heter to be walking over people's heads. Misha ain't sorich like Am Kodesh, but somebody, in other words, implying you, who the Am Kodesh doesn't need them, heyach yifsal rosh Am Kodesh. How can you step over the heads of the Am Kodesh? Now, Tosfos points out, even the fact is, even when they're allowed to, they're not necessarily supposed to, but Tosfos distinguishes, first of all, if they didn't go out with soda. In this case, he's arguing to Avdon. It turns out you didn't go out with Sodach Am Kodesh because Rebbe is telling you you didn't have to go out after all. And also, Tosfos says, even if he went out with Sodach, he should still try to get back to his place in the shortest possible way. Some of the Mephoshim, by the way, point out when he says earlier in the conversation, when he says, I'm Rebbe Shmuel, but I'm Yishmuel B'Reb Yos, why does he have to mention his father's name? Because Tosfos refers over here to a Gemara in Horius that says that the sons of Talmid Chachamim, when necessary, can be Mafsia Roshe Am Kodesh. So therefore, Rebbe Shmuel mentions his father as if to say, fine, maybe on my own I wouldn't deserve that kind of thing, but because my father was Rebbe Yosi, therefore I do. But as opposed to you, Avdan, what do you think you're doing? So Rebbe says to Avdan, you know what? Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yosi is right. Stay in your place. Don't step over people's heads to come back to your place. So the Gemara says that Avdon was the fact that Avdon showed disrespect for Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, he was severely punished for that. But Tana, we learn in a Braisa, but Oysa Shah Nitzara Avdon, at that moment, Avdon got Saras, which Rashi says was his punishment for Lashon Hara. The Tovu Shnei Bonav and his two sons drowned. Umion Ushtei Kalosev and his two daughters-in-law did Mion, which we're going to learn about Mion in the next parak. But the point is, in other words, that it's considered as if they were never married to his sons to begin with. Now, how does that? So, Omer of Nachum Yitzchok, Brich Rachmona to Kasvila Avdan Bahai Alm. So, Rav Nachum Yitzchok, talking 150, 200 years later, says, Baruch Hashem, who embarrassed Avdon in this world, in other words, as bad as these things were, Saras and his children drowning and so forth, he would have been much worse off if he had had, if the punishment had been deferred until Olam Haba. So at least like this, that was Mechaper on what he said, then when his Lashon Hara and is speaking against Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, now he gets his place back in Olam Haba. Now, why did he get these punishments? Maharsha explains like this. The last part of the story we said involved the Yavam. Where Rebbe showed, after all, that in fact Rebbe Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi is necessary, that without Rebbe Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, he wouldn't have known what to do. He would have thought that we can only allow chalitza once the girl is a gedola. So now, and we said that Avdon was still disrespecting Rebbe Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi in connection with that. So now what happened is that Maharsha says the two daughters-in-law who did Mion are the wives of the two sons who drowned. Meaning, in other words, what would have happened normally when the sons drown? So their wives would do Yibum. And then at least, what's the point of Yibum? That the Lahakim La'achiv Shem B'Yisrael, at least they would have a continuation among the Jewish people because their wives would do Yibum. Here, when the wives instead did Miun, meaning that it makes that as if they were never married in the first place. So it means that Avdon's children, there's no Zecha for them afterwards. Second of all, Maharsha says, it may mean also, when we say they drown, it could even mean that they drowned in Mayim She'en Lahem Sof. We're going to talk about at the very end of our Masechta that if a person drowns in water, in water where you can't see all the sides of the water, then we can't say for sure the person is dead unless we actually find the body, because they may have found someplace else and gotten out of the water safely, and therefore we can't allow their wives to be married. So here, the wives at least did meal and make it impossible for them to remarry in the future. If not for that, they would have stayed at Gunas. So the Gemara finished. So we see. So all of that happened to Avdon as a result of the way that he talked disrespectfully against Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi. The Chofetz Chaim actually points out another point as well. what are we saying? We're saying that he told off Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi how he's stepping over Rashi and Kodesh. But now in the end, we see he himself is doing the same thing. So therefore, it comes out that when he, to begin with, when he spoke, when he talked against Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, at least before we could say he was doing it L'shem Shabayim. But now that we see that he himself was ready to do the same thing until Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi told him it's not really appropriate, and Rebbe tells him, fine, don't. So it shows, in other words, to begin with, when he argued against Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, it was not completely L'shem Shamayim. And he, after all, being on a high level, he was a Talmud of Rebbe, after all, he wasn't some person, then therefore he was judged very harshly in Shamayim for that. And we see how careful a person has to be, says the Chofetz Chaim, that a person tells off somebody for doing something, he has to be extra careful that he himself is not guilty of the same thing. So the Gemara finishes off. Two more lines. Amar of Ami midvarav shall berebi, based on what berebi said. Berebi means the distinguished Talmud Chacham, meaning Rabbi Yossi. Based on his words, Nilmud, we can learn ktana chalitza pu'utos, that a ktana can do chalitza once she reaches the age of pu'utos, which is 6 or 7 years old. Where then already she's old enough that she can, that if she sells metalpulin, then it's valid. Actually, the Gemara discusses in Gittin, it depends. A really smart kid would be at 6. A kid who doesn't have as much smarts would be at 10. But sometimes between 6 and 10, when she's old enough to understand about dinim mominus, then she's old enough about buying and selling, then she's old enough for chalitza, says Rabban. Rava amad shetigil, ernest nedarim. Rava says, no, she has to be a little bit older. She has to be of the age when her nedarim would have an effect, namely when she's 11. We're 1 year before bas mitzvah, or for a boy, 1 year before bar mitzvah, if they know that a neder is addressed to Hashem, then their neder is valid. However, the Gemara says, no, the hilchasat shetovi shtei sairis, the bottom line halacha is you can't do chalitza until she actually has shtei sairis, and that's how it is. In fact, Tosfos points out, Rava himself brings in Nida the famous Chazaka de Rava, that usually when a boy reaches 13 or a girl 12, we usually assume that they have Shtei Cyrus, but that works only for things that are bonon, for things that are Raisa. They need Shtei Cyrus, and that's how it is over here. Chalitza being something that are Raisa, we actually need to know that she has Shtei Cyrus. So like we said, we have women check her out and then report their findings to the Rava.
So he should have gone out.
So in other words, it turns out that after all, Abram should have gone out and checked out the situation. And then maybe he would have had a heter to return. Yeah. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.